He was a Marine and then a state trooper. He's worked with some of the biggest movers and shakers in the history of the city. He's a man of faith and a dogged advocate for young people of all backgrounds. Since 2003, he's been an institution on the Westside Airwaves. Get your pen or your pad or your electronic device. School Talk has arrived. Now, here's your host, Emerson.
Take your seats and get ready. Take your seats and get ready. School Talk is in session. My name is Emerson. Once again, for the 1,214th time, you're not, but I'm on the radio with an awesome guest today. I am totally purple proud. Push the magic button. I'm just going to push it. I know I ain't did my nothing else, but just push the magic button. I got students to talk about, things to talk about. I got an awesome guest in the studio. I can't wait to get to him. I got to do some crazy stuff here this morning, but before I do my crazy stuff, good morning, Mr. Producer.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm pumped up, man.
I know you are.
I haven't even drank any of my coffee yet. I'm already pumped up. I'm sorry.
We were walking in together to the back door. You were like, hey buddy, and you're waving at me. I'm walking to the back door. It's like, where is everyone? I'm like, I'm not sure where everyone else is. I'm like, they're probably AP testing or something. Like, there's not many cars in the parking lot, but we're here. We're excited.
You got any plans for the weekend?
Plans for the weekend? Well, work. I have work at the Indianapolis Speedrome.
Speedy stuff.
Yeah,
okay.
Today.
We'll talk about.
And tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday. I have not really any plans other than go to church and then work on schoolwork. So.
All right. Well, you're doing stuff. We got a thing we call the big board. Our students are busy. What's that on the big board?
Yeah, on the big board. Well, prom May 11th at Old National Center in downtown Indianapolis. And then the Lyndhurst International Festival will be May 15th, 4:30 p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Lyndhurst 7th and 8th grade center. Then the last day of school for Wayne Township students is May 29th. And then follow our social medias at WBDG Indy, except TikTok at Giant 90.9 for all the latest in uploading live radio show episodes, funny social media content, and anything Mr. Easter would like to post. So our request line is 317-244-9234. All of our live radio shows are uploaded on audioboom.com. So if you miss an episode, that's okay because you can go to audioboom.com. Then School Talk every Friday morning from 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then replays are Sunday at 2 p.m. with the great Emerson Allen.
Wow. That thing. Hey, folks, you can call in. Our main line here is 244-WBDG. That's 244-9234. And you can call in today. Our lines are open. Because this is an awesome time to call in, an awesome time of the year. It's May. And in Indianapolis, Indiana, you know May is synonymous with the Indianapolis 500. May is synonymous with the racing. And what other racing ideal is would there be have than to have one of the biggest names, a member of one of the biggest names in racing in Indianapolis and racing history, the Bittenhausen family. I mean, I got the man who was behind the wheel. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together, feet together, push the magic button. Hi, Indianapolis, so Merle Bittenhausen. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. It sounds like a fun place to be at this time of the morning.
Anywhere to be long, we won't. I'm so glad to meet you, man. I met you on my JOB, man, and you walked in the door, and I asked you, then you said something about your last name. I said, Bittenhausen. I said, Tony? Gary? Who are you? I'm Merrill. No, oh, man, good morning, Tim. I'm glad you took time out to come talk to us here at Giant 90.9.
Well, Emerson, it is so wonderful to be here. I'll be 81 years old in June.
Push your magic button.
I'm a kind of a health nut, so I really feel good for 81. But my first year at the Speedway was 1949.
Wow.
I watched my dad qualify.
Yeah.
And then my first race was 1950. So I haven't been to all of them since 1950.
Right.
But it's like Christmas for the Bettenhausen family, and I am the last man standing. Yeah. I do have a sister that lives in Phoenix. She's a couple years younger than me. Right. But yeah, I mean, what is May? I mean, May that's the summer Christmas in our life.
So. No. You had to have a. I mean, where'd you go to high school? That's a big one, wasn't it?
See, I'm not a born Hoosier. We moved down there in 1971.
Okay.
I was born in Tinley Park, Illinois.
Okay.
And that's kind of a great lead into what got my dad's driving race cars. Mm-hmm. Is that when he was 18 months old, this is 1917, mm-hmm. he was the youngest of eight kids. His dad was out picking corn with a horse and wagon. Horse reared up, kicked him in the stomach.
Wow.
And my grandpa, dad's dad, died from a ruptured appendix. And so while he was the youngest in the family, he'd go out in the barn, he'd look at a horse, and he'd go, "You killed my dad." So he got into automotive. He got into mechanics.
So that's why he left the farm?
That's why he left the farm.
Wow.
And so there was a racetrack in Chicago called Riverview Park, a little quarter-mile dirt track. And he used to go down there and watch him race when he was a teenager. He got his older brothers to take him down there. And he thought this was a lot better than walking behind a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So when he turned 20, he borrowed some money from his mom, bought a car, and my dad was pretty much a perfectionist on what he thought should be done.
Exactly.
So when he turned 21 and he could drive, he fired him and bought his first helmet, and that's the beginning of it. But we grew up on the family farm in Tinley Park, Illinois.
Yeah, about 600 acres?
500 acres.
500 acres? That's a big farm.
And it was built by my grandpa in 1894 or 5. And right now they have a recreation center that sits on the property. It's the largest in Cook County, and it's the Tony Bettenhausen Recreation Center.
Okay.
And it's just a wonderful thing.
But when your dad first got into racing, you were in school. What were you thinking about doing with your life?
Well, my dad got into racing long before me. He got into racing in 1937. I was born in 43.
Because you had two older brothers.
And Gary was born in 41. I was born in 43. And then Tony was born in 51.
So when you were born, he was already racing?
He was racing, yes.
Wow. Okay.
And like I say, came down there in 49. So I came down there first time just before my sixth birthday to watch qualifying. So
it's already in your blood. Came out with racing in your blood.
Well, this is the biggest question that we've all been asked over the years was, your dad died driving a race car. How could you go back and do the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
I was 17 when he died in 1961, and we all talked about everything in our life that has any value, any meaning, came from my dad driving race cars.
Mm-hmm.
His personality, everything about him was through what he loved about driving race cars. And he was such a wonderful man and such a happy man.
Yeah.
And I mean, how can you say, I'm not going to do that anymore? But it was he was a great father, only went to seventh grade.
Okay.
He lived on a farm. But it was very smart,
very
disciplined.
You said farm. That's hard work.
Yes, it is.
That's hard work. So, God, that's you got a book, and I'm going to go get the book right now because on that cover of the book, and I'm going to talk about it, it has a picture of you, picture of Gary, picture of Pops, you know, and you guys were your kids growing up in this worldwide world of racing is so interesting. I got so much more I want to talk about. But May is a bittersweet and sweet month because this is May 10th. May 12th was the 1961 when your pops passed.
Yes. In that year, he had a new kind of car, and he was the first one to go over 149 miles an hour on the racetrack with other cars there. And he was picked to be the favorite. Well, on May 12th, 1961, it was the Friday before the first weekend of qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, the track opened up on May 1st, and you practiced all the way up until every day until the day Wednesday before the 500. But he tried to help a friend out, and he took the car out, made four laps, and for some reason came down to French Drive and stuck one finger up. And next lap, coming off the fourth corner, and when the car was assembled, they forgot to put a cotter key in a castle nut. And from the car running during the month, that nut backed its way off, and it fell out of the right front suspension. So the USAC officials actually saw it come out from underneath.
Oh, my goodness.
And so they put the yellow flag on just about the time my dad was at the start-finish line. Well, when he got on the brakes, when he saw the yellow flag, the car immediately turned right because the suspension dropped. And they hit the wall and got up on top of the wall, and he was pretty well killed instantly. So, in fact, that was going to be, I was in Carl Sandburg High School in Orland Park, Illinois.
Okay.
I was a senior getting ready to graduate, and they came, and the school officials, they said, come out. I was just finishing my swimming classes, and the guy was real somber, and you got to go to the office, Merle. Well, we walked down the hall, and just about the time I got to the office, my cousin was standing there with a frown on his face, and this is about 2:30. Well, my dad died at right around 1 o'clock on May 12th, and he said, "Dad, your dad had an accident and it's gone all, you know, bad all the way." And so that was we missed that year, and needless to say, but it just, the love of racing, the love of Indianapolis, the love of the 500, it was very risky back then.
Yeah. Your pop, Tony, said, and I got this quote, he said during that May 12th trial, that racing, that testing that one vehicle, he said, "I'm just warming this baby up."
Yeah.
I love that quote. That is one we can use that a lot. Just warm that baby up because he wanted to get to that 150.
Yeah,
you know, that was great. Right. I'm gonna go get this book. I'm gonna turn the mic over to Mr. Richard. I want to get this book. I'm gonna probably get a speeding ticket, but Mr. Richard, take over the microphone. But tell me more. Do you have kids now?
Do what?
You got kids?
Yes, I have a daughter and I have a son, 49 and 47.
Wow.
My daughter lives up in Fishers, and she has five children, and she's married to an IMPD police officer, and so that's cool. And I have a son that lives in near St. Louis. I couldn't name the city, but no one would know it, so I'll say St. Louis. It's easier there. And when we grew up, my son was about 4 years old, and we actually lived in Wood Point, just west of on 10th Street here. We were one of the third or fourth people to buy in there, and that we moved in July of 1978. So I've always been, once I moved from Indianapolis, I've been a West Sider my whole life. And my kids would have gone to Ben Davis, but a job came up, and I left and moved to Wisconsin and raised my children there. And then eventually I got divorced in 1991 and my son came back, and then he was played for Lawrence North. He was quite a basketball player and honored. But back to my
Ryan, right?
Ryan, yeah.
Brain finally worked.
Yeah. but there's a great, people say, well, how come your son didn't drive race cars? And honestly, with what had happened to me and what happened to my dad, and then Gary had an accident, and he had trouble. I lost my right arm in 1972, for those of you that aren't in racing history. And then Gary got hurt a couple years later. And I didn't want I talked to my wife, and we didn't want our son to drive race cars. Well, in the meantime, Gary's brings over a two-seat go-kart, and our Hollywood Wood Point subdivision, he's up over the curbs, and my son's eyes are big as silver dollars, and he just kept getting more excited and more excited. So Gary leaves the go-kart there, and we had a talk that night, and I said, I don't want him to drive race cars. And so I called Gary back, and he came and picked the go-kart up. And I tell the story that a Bettenhausen's hands are kind of molded to go around a steering wheel. And when I gave the go-kart back to Gary, I said I took my hand and I opened up his fingers and I got his hand flat and I stuck a basketball in his hand. I said, we're in Indiana. There's Indy 500 and there's basketball. And so he started, and we lived in a neighborhood. Most of the kids were older. And he worked really hard, and I'll fast forward the story. He was in Wisconsin. He went to a basketball camp that Howie Garfinkel has out in New Jersey. It's very famous. Michael Jordan and everybody went there. Called me one night, and I'm divorced now, and I have my son living with me, and said, you know, Ryan's really good, but if you leave him in Wisconsin, I don't think anybody will know about him. That's before Wisconsin right. got really good at basketball. And so I called my ex-wife and said, would you like to move back to Indianapolis? I had a commitment with a job that I had to stay there for till 1994. And so moved back to Indianapolis, knew some friends on the north side around Fishers, and my son went and played all day at Lawrence North. And make a long story short, they decided he wanted to move to Indiana. Moved down there, played for Lawrence North, and this is 96, 97, 98, 99. And, he moved down here in 93, and he graduated from Lawrence North, I think, in 95. Well, the honor of that fact is that Steve Alford was coaching at Manchester and got his big promotion to Southwest Missouri State Division I, and my son was Steve Alford's first Division I recruit. And I think of the only real teacher he had was a one-armed man that never played basketball game of basketball in his life. But he played 4 years at Southwest Missouri State. And his senior year, they made the Sweet 16. They got beat by Duke in the Meadowlands. So just quite an honor.
If you're just joining us, we have Merle Bettenhausen with us here on School Talk this morning. I'm John Easter. Emerson stepped away. He went home for just a moment to grab Merle's book. And, as you talk, and we've seen it already here this morning, you have such a great attitude about what happened to you as well, losing your arm in the racing accident at Michigan. And you said it was 1972?
Yes.
So cars were a lot different back then, as we kind of briefly talked about off air. So how do you keep such a great attitude? Because a lot of people, would look at racing and be bitter about it. But you have such a great attitude, and so did your family.
Thank you. The facts, I'll explain what happened. It was my first IndyCar. I took my rookie test here at Indianapolis in 1972, and I was in a local team, Grant King, actually based west on west side of on Crawfordsville Road. But it wasn't a big money team, and the cars back then were designed so much differently now. We used to carry 70 gallons of methanol, mm-hmm. 35 gallons on each side. And since I didn't qualify at Michigan, or didn't qualify at Indy, my next available race would have been the Michigan 200. And went up there and I qualified 18th, and everything was just great. And I'm finally going to get in my first race. Well, race started, ran three laps, and being a rookie and not understanding the cars and the turbulence and everything, I got about 6 inches too high coming off the second corner, and the right front wheel hit the wall. It broke off, and it ruptured the 35-gallon fuel tank on the right side, and it instantly caught fire. Simultaneously, my head went over and hit the side of the windshield, and we only had plastic buttons that held the face shields on back then. That's when the full-face helmets were in their infancy. And when that button sheared off, the face shield came off. And so the fire starts. I'm running about 150 mile an hour. Fire comes up in my face. And the first instinct is to, you don't know how fast you're going. You don't want to be sitting in a fire. So I undid my seat belts. And in Indy cars, it's like sitting in a bathtub, and you got to put your arms outside the cockpit to push your way out. So I started to push myself up out of the car. It went back and hit the wall a second time, and the car is aluminum. The guardrail was steel. I got my arm caught in and broke the arm, and through all the mesh of metal and aluminum, it cut my arm off, and the arm was laying on the racetrack. Well, I fell back down in the fire. The car never spun, just kept bouncing off the wall, going down the backstretch, and I'm trying to get out of the fire, and didn't even know my arm was gone because the fire was that intense. Mm-hmm. Finally came to a stop, and it's sitting there, and I'm thinking, and I was pushing, trying to get out, but like I thought, why isn't your right arm working? Well, I turned my head over and looked down, and I saw that my arm was gone, and I yelled, "Oh, my God, help me, please." And this is about a little over a minute from the time it all happened. And when they heard me yell, they came in and they pulled me out. And I had the loss of right arm, about 20% burns on my legs. And my entire face was burned where the opening was in the helmet. And went to the hospital, spent 2 months in the University of Michigan Hospital in Ann Arbor. And I'm getting to the attitude thing. Well, when I found out that they said that I was probably 40 seconds, 45 seconds from losing my vision because of the sitting in fire, I had two sets of eyelids grafted on me, or another minute and a half, I would have lost enough blood to died because of the arm being gone. And I started thinking, wow, my cup is half full. It's not half empty. Right. I mean, everything is what could have been compared to what happened. And I'll tell you what, life's not convenient with one arm, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, I say, everybody, I'd rather be left-handed than a memory.
Yeah.
And so I think God has blessed me with the fact that he didn't want me then, but he said, "I'm going to give you a test." And the test is, let's see how good you can do it with one hand. And so it's just been a very, I think more of a positive thing. Now, you got to listen close to what I'm going to say here. In psychologists I've read, they say that in a man's lifetime, they'll use about 18% of their brain's capability. It just, we have all this wonderful things up here, but we never go searching to find how much we can do or how well we can do it. And so we just live our lives, and that's fine. But when you've got one arm, everything is a project. Everything you do, from pulling on your pants and hooking them in your belt. And so I've been tested almost every minute of every day, and I'm not a hero or anything. I've talked to other people and have the same feelings about how you've got to cope, be inventive if you've got half the equipment to do it with. So that's why life is so wonderful, and I'm so blessed, and I have 8 grandkids. I just had a great granddaughter, and you know what? How could I not be happy?
You got that right. I listened to your story and even listened to your crash, and then knowing the history of your father's crash and knowing the history of Gary's helicopter crash. Certain words come to my mind. Family. Y'all tight. Y'all were tight. Y'all still tight. Dedication. More, y'all had all that dedication, family dedication to the raising, happiness. Y'all happy. I mean, in spite of all the trials and tribulations, you're a happy family. And definitely determined. Determination. Determined. Because y'all was chasing your daddy's dream, too. Because Tony, your pops, wanted to win the 500. And what I've read, that was y'all desire too, to win it for your pops, which was dedication. And so I know it was in the blood. But but now, Merle, you're it. You're the Bettenhausen. You're the face, the name. When you walk into the store and you say your name, and my store lighted up. My store lit up when you walked into my store and you said your name. Even the customers walk out the door, yeah, I know that family, yeah. So now, what is Merle doing out here in the world when you talk to people and encourage people? What are you saying to them? Because we need people, blood. I mean, we need encouragement out there.
My life, there's four words.
There you go.
You had a version of them, but the four words that I live my life by. First off, everybody must adapt to change. Change is the vitamin of life. Mm-hmm. If you go back through the history of who you are, how old you are, the first time you saw something on TV and it was like letters and words, you couldn't read. And you changed and you learned how. And so change, commitment. Nothing happens in life without making a commitment. That commitment can be one thing, racing forever. Mm-hmm. But when things happen to you, and your life goes through a change, you've got to learn to recommit to something different. And that doesn't mean that commitment is going to be for the rest of your life to the new commitment, but whatever you're doing, make a commitment to it. My dad, we grew up with his words were, I said, do it right or don't do it at all. And if I heard that once, I heard it 1,000 times. So you make a commitment, and then you have effort. You must, I'm going to do this. You can't then wander around thinking, you must make all the effort to be the best you can. And then discipline. And the discipline goes on top of you do the effort. But you just, after you get something accomplished, you just can't quit. You got to keep the effort going. And keep developing it, making bigger and better. And so change, commitment, effort, and discipline. If young people can decide and that this is what I need to do, then anything is possible. Anything is possible. And so after I lost my arm, okay. And I haven't even talked to the greatest, other than my children being born, the greatest thing I've never even talked about yet. I came back racing 11 months after I lost my arm. And I raced USAC midgets, and I ran some USAC sprint cars. And midgets, you know, they run 90, 100 mile an hour smaller tracks. We had a race in Johnson City, Tennessee. I started racing again in June. And in August, we had a race down there. And condense the story, but I had been running some eighths, some sevenths, tenths, whatever. Not really competitive enough to win a race with one arm. But there was a fellow out east that raced, and he kind of motivated me that if he could do it, I could do it. He wasn't that good, but I figured I was better than him. So that's, I think that was part of the Bettenhausen. Do it right or don't do it at all. So this race in Johnson City, Tennessee, and I started fourth, and all at once I'm third, and I'm following Bill Engelhardt, great, great race driver back in the 70s, and I'm faster than him. And this was the night in my life that I realized how much more we have in our thinking power than we know we have. Now, let me tell you, if you're a race driver, the absolute worst thing that you can experience is to be faster than the guy in front of you and not be able to pass it because the track conditions or whatever. So now I was faster than this guy in turn four, but he was faster in turn one. And I'm sitting there, and my mind is just going a million mile an hour. If I had two arms, my arms would have superseded my head, and I'd have done something stupid. I say that there's no way I would have ever won that race with two arms because I thought I could manhandle it and pass him. Right. But so I sat there and I waited. I can still visualize the people standing around the racetrack. That was 51 years ago in August. Mm-hmm. And I realized, well, wait, let's just don't be stupid. No, I never showed him I was behind him. He never knew I was faster. And I just kind of, I was dogging him. Yeah. And so I made my mind up. I'll wait till the last lap, the last corner, and make one attempt. Then I wouldn't have to worry about what's going to happen in turn one if I'm in the wrong position on the racetrack. So I waited and I waited. I went into turn three, and I got him lined up. And I just I chugged alongside him. It was hard, slick dirt track. Got alongside him, and when we came off four, once he saw me, I startled him so much, he just pushed the gas pedal down and went, and I went, and I, literally, about 4 inches, I beat him by.
Wow.
So in life, probably how many times have we heard this statement or even said it? I could beat your butt with one arm tied behind my back, right? Yeah. Okay, and you know, and that's fun, right? So the race is done, and from that moment, right now, I didn't have my arm tied behind my back. I didn't have it, and no one has ever done that before. He won a race with one arm, but I. Some guy told me, who would want to, Murray? and so that is what I live on. I live on greatness that I'm alive. God has blessed me. I live on the discipline that God has taught me to live my life by, whether it's work, whether it's being a grandpa, a great grandpa, a father, and I've just taken what I'd like to believe is a moment of tragedy, and I hope I'm better because of the tragedy, and I think I am.
So. Well, it's just after 8. We're going over, obviously. Oh, this is WBDGFM HD1 Indianapolis, and that's fine. There's no time limit on Emerson shows. We could go all morning if you're okay with it.
Are you serving lunch?
No, if you're okay with it, certainly. Just a question I had while I was sitting here. We've talked a lot about your father. We've talked about your brothers, your sister. But I remember, I think it was the 1989 Indianapolis 500 broadcast. I want to say maybe Sam Posey or Jack Arute did a story on your family. It had you and Tony and Gary, but it also had your mother in it.
Right.
And this is Mother's Day weekend. So, you know, Mama Bettenhausen had to be a very tough lady. Talk about your mother here on Mother's Day weekend.
I've thought about this so many times. Back in the day, when your dad got in a race car, he'd go around and give us all a kiss on the cheek, and he'd watch him walk away to go out to the starting line, getting a race car. Every time your mind went, hope that's not the last time I see him. Because safety back in the day, they couldn't even pronounce it, much less, you know, have it on cars. And I don't know of any woman that went through living with her husband driving race cars, her feeling of same feeling I had. Just anyone. We've talked about kids that had dads racing. You just hoped. And my mom went through losing her husband. Then the stupidity of me, I'll never forget, when first time she saw me, And it's hard to explain how ugly I was. But if you could just imagine the Lone Ranger's mask. Everybody's seen the Lone Ranger. That was one gigantic big scab, and it came off, and then I was fixed up. And I'd walk in a restaurant, and people would just go, oh. So imagine what your mom thinks when she sees you. And the arm is gone. And I said, Mom, I said, my head's good. Everything is fine. She said, this isn't the way I made you. And hard to say anything different
right.
about that. But watched me go through, and then Gary got hurt. And then, my God, 2000, she's living in Monrovia, Gary out there, and my kid brother, my kid brother was a wonderful, wonderful businessman, had a race team, did all kinds of things, but he wasn't a very good driver, didn't go very fast. He didn't grow up with Tony Bettenhausen. He was 9 when my dad died. Mm-hmm. And so my mom remarried, and she remarried a bartender. With a personality, do you know what a good bartender, how much money he makes? If he can have fun with you?
Good night.
I mean, he becomes, a good bartender is your best friend, right? Make you laugh?
Yeah.
Well, my kid brother, because he didn't have, damn it, do it right personality that my dad raised, mm-hmm. but he had this fun, and you couldn't help but love him.
Right.
So Tony's first team was, He told everybody, he went around to 30 of his best friends and said, you want to be an Indy owner? And the guy said, yeah. I'll tell you what, you give me $5,000 and you become part of an Indy car owner team.
Mm-hmm.
But don't ever expect to get the money back. And so that's how he got 30 guys to give him $5,000, and that's how he formed his first racing team. But back to my mom. So he becomes a pilot, and then he's got this brainstorm. He wants to get a twin.
Yeah.
So he buys a Beach Baron twin. And it was like
Gary.
A space shuttle when I sat in. Make a long story short, he comes back from spring training, 2000, and they hit some ice coming over Lexington, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had boots on it and everything to get rid of the ice. But being a rookie, he had didn't have many hours in it. It ices up and he crashes, and him, his wife, and two business partners all die in the crash. So I'm working at Ray Skillman. I'm his advertising manager. But guess who is the executor of the estate? Guess who is the guardian of his kids?
Yeah.
I can only put one hand up to show you that was me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and so now this was thrust upon me, and so. Most difficult time was dealing with my mom. So my mom was so strong. So, and the heartache that the woman went through, but she was rock solid, just
rock star.
Do anything. Yeah, the rock solid. She was a rock solid rock star.
Yep.
So,
you got this book, and I had to go get it, y'all. You know, it says Tony right across the front when Merle first showed it to me. And then Mr. Isher sent me a link to this YouTube documentary. I can't say that word either. I ain't been drinking, y'all.
You know, that happened to me when I lost my arm. What's your excuse?
Wait a minute. You even jumped out of your car when you lost your arm. I read that. You jumped out of your car. You trying to go somewhere. Get back in there. So anyway, Merle, you crazy. But anyway.
I hope.
Y'all, it's radio. And the book, it's thick. It's about, an inch and a quarter or something like that?
4 inches, isn't it?
Oh, something like that. And we got the good measurement up here. And it's Tony Bettenhausen's Sons, American Racing Family Album, edited by Gordon Kirby with Merle and Susan Bettenhausen. I've went through it. It is awesome, y'all. The history. I'm 69, so I've lived through a lot of the history that's in the book, And I remember the helicopter crash. I remember that also.
Oh, it was a twin-engine airplane.
What, the same, yeah.
Yeah.
Going down. I remember that. And because, living in India, you can't help it. If you live in India, you're going to know something about racing. Or you're going to be around it somehow. Tell me a little bit about, and how can folks get this, about this book?
Well, it's inside. The production of this book was from Racemaker Press.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go online, wherever it is, it's in here. Here.
I see it. Racemaker Press.
Racemaker Boston. Press. Now, the fellow that started it and owns this company, Racemaker Press, he's a racer. He's got some old cars and everything. But he lost his wife, and the company is going out of business. And so if there anybody's interested, go to Racemaker Press, and they don't have very many copies left.
But I
think they have some, and they'll probably be out of business by the end of the year, and it breaks my heart.
This is going to be a treasure. This is going to be a treasure for somebody at the coffee table. Because I'm coffee table china cabinet. I mean, you keep this. I mean, I ain't lying.
Well, they say, they call this a man's book. You know why? Because it's all
got
pictures.
A lot of pictures. They got some words in there too. Like it was a small word like the, my.
But technically, if you think of it, a picture's worth 1,000 words. So men are reading more than women.
Yeah, that's true too. It's just beautiful. It is just one beautiful publication. I got a lot of history in it,
and I think photographs to bring back some memories.
If you're a race fan,
I never mentioned. We were on a farm. We farmed 540 acres, and I got my education sitting behind a John Deere tractor with great exhaust from the exhaust pipe. But great parents, I wouldn't change a day in my life. And I say that because I stand in front of the mirror and I go, you know what?
Yeah.
Not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy. And I don't know if something different would have happened to me in my life.
Right.
If I'd liked that guy as much.
I was going to say the same thing. Or the question would have been, and you already answered the question, would you do anything different?
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. See, God tests us.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever said that when you were born, I didn't get any certificates said your life's going to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. I just got a slap in the butt and start breathing.
Yeah, why do you do that?
And that started everything. And most, and I'd like to say about 98% of who we are, what we do, is under our own self decisions. I call life is a choose button.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great saying in life, and this is very important, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
That's decisions we make. I mean, now I can walk out of here and I've got this, which choose button am I going to use today?
Mm-hmm.
Some of these are my quotes. The one I like best, being 81, is that I never had a yesterday that will be as good as my tomorrow.
Whoa, yeah, that's huge. I can use that.
Now, that doesn't mean I want to go back and drive race cars and win a race car.
Right, right.
But it means that I haven't stopped thinking
about
what I'm going to do and how better I'm going to be. And this can happen at age 10.
Yeah.
Age 20,
yeah.
I never had a yesterday
yeah.
as good as my tomorrow. As long as you keep wanting more, doing it the right way, anything is possible.
Wow, man.
But you got to be careful.
Careful what you ask for, too, though.
Well, see, the problem...
You just might get it.
Well, the problem is that we have so many things to choose from, and very few are good for you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of choosing you can do that's a negative thing. Another one of mine is your picture of life is surrounded by your frame of mind.
Yeah.
And so I just, I'm just, you know what? I'm a guy that's really tried his whole life, and I've done some good things, and try not to do bad things, because before I push that choose button, what's going to be? Ray Skillman told me once, and because he always seemed to know what the car business was, how what was going to happen 6 months from now, and he said it's like life. Everything could be great in life and wonderful, but there's mountains in front of you. And when there's a mountain in front of you, you don't know what's on the other side till you get there. So you can't make all decisions by looking at this side of the mountain.
Exactly.
Because there's other things in front of you. And that's why the choose button is so important.
Choose button is so important.
Yeah.
Well, we are really glad you chose to come to our station.
No, I'm really, really, really glad you asked. Folks, I'm sorry. I did not beg to be on here.
No, you said Benton. I mean, when you said how did my face look when you explain my face? Explain my face to my audience when you first said your last name. Look, what? How did my face? Explain my face.
He thought I was Marilyn Monroe or something.
I was like a kid in a candy store.
He's fibbing now, because the first thing that caught his attention is I walked in and I said, you know, blah, 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 do you have a veteran's discount? and he jumped up and he said, yes, we do. and he said, are you a veteran? I said, yes, I am. And he said, I am too. I'm a Marine. And then he found out my name, and then the love grew between us.
It was awesome. It was like, now I start talking to my customers even. I said, you know, yeah.
So, you know, this time, the month of May, is still, you said, I don't know if you said it on the air or off the air, you said it's Christmas for the Bettenhausens.
Right.
What does it mean to you? You know, you didn't race in the Indy 500. You said you passed your rookie test.
Right.
Which, if you don't know, it was probably a little bit different than it is today.
150 instead of 215.
Yeah. But you passed your rookie test, and you didn't race at Indy, but your family has been such a part of it. Both your brothers raced there. Your father raced there. But what does it mean to you now that Bettenhausen is a name that lights people up here in Indianapolis?
You know, I just thought of this. When it comes to our family, we all know that there is no good golfer that can be a great golfer without a good caddy. He's got to know, expect, help the man become better, right? Well, I raced from 1967 when I got out of the Army, and I lost my arm in 72. So I was you know, heading up the stairs to be an Indy 500 driver, and I tripped and I fell back down. Came back, won a race with one arm, and then quit. And I almost feel like when I look at what my dad accomplished, what Gary accomplished, Tony did, ownership, greatness, wonderful man. But I was there telling him the yardage and telling him, you know, where the bunkers were and don't hit it in the water and all that. And so, and now to have God designed that I was going to be the last man standing. I will say this, he picked the right one to be the last man standing. And maybe I should have been a stand-up comic or a motivational speaker instead of a race driver, but that's behind me, and I can't go there, and I don't want to go there, but it's such an honor. And you brought this up, Flow Racing. They cover USAC's midget and sprint car racing, all kinds of racing and other sports. But they did a documentary on her family called Legends of Racing, The Bettenhausen Family. It's on YouTube right now. You can, enter that and find out all. But it's a 90-minute documentary. And it was on last year on WTHR Channel 13, Saturday before the Grand Prix. Ray Skillman, I work for him, he's a dear friend of mine, and when this documentary came out, he said, well, you know what, that should run every year. I said, what? It's like Christmas Story. I mean, when's Christmas Story run? At Christmas. Well, the Bettenhausens and the Indy 500, I mean, they're going to be an Indy 500? There ought to be the Legends of the Racing, Bettenhausen. Yeah. So through him and some friends at Channel 13, it's going to be on again at 12:30 this Sunday. And I know you all have your wonderful mom out and be buying her lunch and dinner and whatever, but set your recordings because
it's good.
It makes me so proud. And the fact that I'm still here to do that. And the ironic thing about this is that 1961, May 12th, my dad died around 1 o'clock when he crashed at the Speedway. Well, this Legends of Racing, the Bettenhausen family, starts at 12:30 this Sunday, May 12th. And while this show is running, it'll be the 63rd anniversary of when my dad passed on the front straightaway of the Speedway.
Wow. And the crazy part, this show repeats itself Sunday at 2 p.m. Right after.
If I'd have known, I'd put a plug in.
But you're talking about plug, motivational speaking, motivational speakers. Nobody wants to listen to nobody who don't know something about something. You know a lot about some things. Folks can learn from your life and your experiences. Yes, you are a motivational speaker. Yes, you are full of motivation. Yes, you do motivate me. You know, it's your life journey, your family's sacrifices. That's motivation for me to do better, to do the things that I want to do. I'm 69. I ain't done yet.
Right.
You know, so yes, you are where you're supposed to be right now. God don't make mistakes. Yeah. We might not understand what he does or why he does or when he does it. Yeah. But, you're the right man standing.
But you know what? And I don't know if God makes mistakes or God just says, you need a test in your life. No one said it was the bed of roses is going to be on your birth certificate.
Yeah, nope.
No one said you're going to get everything you want in life. But you know what? He gives you the tools.
Yeah.
To basically do whatever you want. Yeah. And if anybody,
use them right.
You should write this down. In life, there's four important things. There's always going to be a change. Mm-hmm. When there is, you must make a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
That commitment must have effort behind it and discipline to continue forever.
Wow.
And you know what? It's like someone asked me once, well, what do you do, Merle? I said, well, you know what? I'm not sitting in the pits rusting.
Yeah.
I'm not on the track. I'm not on that big track.
Yeah.
But I'm on the other tracks.
Yeah.
And I'm not sitting in the pits waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
And you just got to believe in you and find that choose button that's going to make you better tomorrow and better on the other side of the mountain.
That'll work. I got no more questions. I got one last comment. Gentlemen, Big Nelly, John, any parting thoughts? Because this has been awesome. We always just, Merrill, we do go over sometimes. And with certain guests, they just, we don't want them to go. Mr. Easter ain't that.
Well, and just one thing, Emerson, this is his last year doing this show. And I just was sitting here thinking about it. Next week, Nelly's the host and Big Rob. Those are your hosts. The last show is yours.
Oh, yeah.
So you are Emerson's final guest on School Talk. And
I'm blessed, man.
What a way to finish. This has been what a great hour of radio. So.
Well, this can be a radio Christmas story. I'll be here next May.
20 years been doing this show. since 2003, and this is my last year doing the show. I'll still be hanging around with the kids doing some crazy stuff. Yeah. But this is my last year hosting the show. And when you walk through the store and I called Mr. Easter, I said, come on, book him. How much time I got left? Get him in there. He's got to be. And the month of May is, you're so perfect for the month. Your history, your family, the generations, the history, the motivation. I mean, we crack jokes about our disabilities because, you know, and we look at things differently when you got what you got. When you got what you got, you use what you got and you smile and you keep on going.
And it makes you work hard.
And it makes you definitely work hard. Yeah. You know, so I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, folks. We've been talking to the man, Merle Bittenhausen, born June 9th. You got a question?
Yeah, yeah.
Before I
yes,
close
sir.
Out?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Oh, Big Nelly, oh, come on. Put your magic button for yourself.
I
got something.
He's got a question. I didn't know I forgot anything.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So my question, Mr. Bittenhausen, so Merle. After...
I'm not old enough to be Mr.
Okay.
He was in the military, that's my dad.
Yeah. Okay, Merle. So after that crash at Michigan and you lost your arm, you're in the University of Michigan's hospital in Ann Arbor for 2 months, you get back in a race car and you're racing with, you know, one arm, and... through all the doubt and everyone doubting you or didn't believe you, like, oh, he's not going to win a race. He only has one arm. I'm going to smoke him. He ain't going to beat me. How did you stay motivated and stay positive and stay confident in yourself? Like, okay, well, I got something for these boys. You know, I might have one arm, but I'm not going to go down without fighting. And I'm going to succeed and win a race and succeed in life. How did you just mentally stay motivated?
In life, nobody starts at the top. Nobody is Michael Jordan when he won the 5 NBA championships.
Six, excuse me.
You're going to correct the man on air.
Hey, I'm sorry. That's the greatest basketball player
get
of
him,
all
Merle.
Time. He can become the next producer of School Talk. Kick me off.
But you know
he
what?
He asked me the same way.
He had a thought once he enjoyed playing basketball that he could do it better and do it more. And I knew that I had a distinct disadvantage with one arm. I mean, it was pretty obvious. But I kept believing that I could. And that is probably the most positive thing you can have in your life, is to not get discouraged. And just keep working at being better and doing more. And I thought I had enough heart. I thought I had enough talent and that I could do this. And I could see as every race I progressed, I got better.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll take that positive words, and I'll make humor out of it too. So I'm on the front straightaway. The first race was at Lost Creek, Kentucky, and this is 11 months after I crashed. And a guy comes up to me, he goes, "You're Merle Bettenhausen, huh?" I said, "Yeah." He says, he kind of shook his head, "You didn't lose your arm, you lost your mind." but then believe, work hard, give effort, and someone says, when you believe and you work hard, you have a commitment, you really get lucky.
Yeah. We're lucky to have you here today. I mean, your birthday's coming up in June 9th, too. You're going to be 16. You're going to be 16
don't
again.
Don't give me any candy. I'm a vegetarian.
I like to say you got falsies. Yeah. You can't. No, my little alum. But anyway, your second oldest member of the Bittenhausen racing family, his son of Tony Bittenhausen and the brother of Gary and Tony Bittenhausen Jr. I'm going to leave on this one quote because you are really, 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 really in this stage right now. And the quote we all know, "I'm just warming this baby up." You got a lot to give up, Merle. You got a lot to give back. You ain't done yet.
Yeah. I'm not resting in the pits.
No, you ain't resting in the pits. You keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on smiling. Keep on lifting people up. People need to hear that laugh. The people need to see that smile. People are going through stuff, and they think they got this. They ain't got that. They wish they had. They wish they had that. You can show them through your life and your experiences. Yes, yes, life is tough. But doggone it, life is good.
Yes, it is.
And you're the last man standing. There's a reason for that. Thank you for coming in.
It's been all my pleasure.
Whoa, folks, I didn't know.
I feel bad for you folks. You're gonna miss this young man sitting next to me.
I didn't know.
This 69-year-old kid, because you got to listen to somebody else, and they got deep shoes to fill.
Thank you very much. I didn't know. I really honestly didn't know. I lost track of the time. I didn't know this was my last show. That kind of hit me kind of hard. I didn't know that until Mr. Easter. I kind of like, it is? Dang. Time does fly. Woo. So next week, McNally, you in charge of the board and the microphone. I don't know what you're going to do.
I have no idea. I have to discuss with Big Rob on what our plans are. That's a great question.
Man, don't answer it right now because I can't handle two questions in a row.
We're going to have to make it spectacular for sure.
Yeah, I heard. You got to sign this book for me. You got to sign this book. Mr. Easter just ordered one. And I know you can come back and sign his too. So,
you get it?
A little plug there. Folks, I don't know what else to say. This is my, I'll probably say, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll say something next week. I don't know what to say this time because this is not my day. This is Merle's day. And man, I tell you, man, this, I got to say something. When you left my workplace and walked out, man, I was like a kid in the candy store. I was jumping up and down. I grabbed my phone. I sent Mr. Okay, I'm gonna send that. I'm gonna find the text I even sent Mr. Easter. He can probably find it faster than I can. But I was like, I didn't waste no time. And it was like, you find it? And I got it. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll see if I can do it, Emerson. Man, I just met Merle Bettenhausen. I got to get him on the show in May. He said yes. This would be an awesome show. And I texted back, that would be an honor. I gave him two dates.
So how long have you had a sheltered life?
I'm kind of shy, you know. I don't like microphones, you know, and like audiences and stuff like that. You know?
Okay, buddy.
Well, I just want to say that I'm a little bashful. But Emerson brought the best out in me, and it's an honor to be here. And I just want everybody to just keep believing in themselves and doing what's right, and you'll be surprised how lucky you're going to get later in life.
Yeah, I got me a brand new friend, so I'm cool with that, you know. You don't use that word friends lightly, but when you meet somebody and just don't even know them that much, but you know, you can just something about them that says they're in the friend category already, and that's pretty cool. So we're going to close it up, and then next week, McNally going to do something, and maybe I'll come back and bug him. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just go play golf. I don't play golf no more. I played golf one time, and then I didn't know what I was doing. Everybody was throwing clubs after they missed a shot. Is that part of the game? Nelson, no.
Emerson. Emerson Allen at the Masters Tournament retirement special.
I threw clubs. Anyway, to the parents and to the teachers. Our students have so much to give. You must teach them to be investors in themselves and others. What to give up, but they're going to be giving back. So remember, your future is in the hands of the ones you hang with. It's okay to be a copycat. Just copy the right cat. You could copy Merle. Merle, yeah, you could copy Merle. He has dedication. He has family ties. He believes in the family. He has motivation. He has determination. He loves to live. He loves life. He's got a beautiful smile. Yeah, you copy Merle. You can't go wrong. Just don't be sagging your pants, because Merle don't be sagging no pants.
We got a fan out here.
We got a fan out here? Oh, we got a fan? We got fans out here. We got fans. My last show? The views expressed on School Talk, not the views of MC, Wayne Township, Ben Davis High School, Giant 90.9. My views and views of my guests. Next week, Big Nelly's going to run this big booger. 20 years running. Maybe I'll come back and bug him. I don't know what I'm going to do this week. I don't know. It's just, I'll be back. I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to be doing something. I don't know.
Bobby, help me. Get me out of here. Let me go.
See you next week. No, you won't. See Big Nelly next week on School Talk. Bye. Well, I don't know.